Welcome to the Professional Website Investors Podcast, the show where we talk about what it takes to successfully buy, operate, scale, and sell a thriving e-commerce business. When it comes to doing business online, we believe that buying an existing website is far superior to building one from scratch. So, if you're a career professional who is looking to become an e-commerce store owner, listening to this show will give you the knowledge, tools, and community support you need to be successful.
I'm your host, Ryan Cowden. And this week, we're joined by Ian Bond from ProfessionalWebsiteInvestors.com. In this episode of the Professional Website Investor Podcast, Ian and I discuss how to properly evaluate available e-commerce websites. When you're ready to enter the marketplace and purchase an e-commerce website, you will find an active marketplace with many potential sellers. It's an exciting time to be examining your options and determining where you'll spend your money. There's a lot of information available for you to peruse as you examine potential new online properties. But if you're getting into this market for the first time, you may not know exactly what you're looking for. Once you get the readily available data, it's important to know what the information means and which indicators are most likely to minimize risk. On today's episode, you'll hear the profit margins and search engine optimization indicators that you should examine before anything else. Ian recommends investing in websites that have a 25% profit margin or higher, and that you use Google Analytics to evaluate the search engine optimization of a potential purchase. Then, you'll hear possible times to make exception to this rule. You don't want to often break this rule, but if your website is moving a lot of goods, you may be able to compromise a little bit on the profit margins. Next, we'll talk about how to analyze a website's navigability and usability. You're looking for websites that are simple, easy to use, and have great search features. After that, we'll talk about how to tell if a website conveys trustworthiness to its customers. These are some of the intangible features of a website, but you are looking for elements like the use of space, lifestyle photos of the product, and other indicators that will communicate trust to potential buyers. And finally, we'll talk about places to find accurate data about these websites. These would include places like Google Analytics, and the resources available at ProfessionalWebsiteInvestors.com. You could also consider joining the free Professional Website Investor VIP Facebook group for more support. If you're looking for sound ways to ground your investments, and this is one episode you won't want to miss, there's a lot of actionable advice in this episode, so grab something to write with because you're going to want to take notes. As always, I'll be back on the other side to wrap up any loose ends. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Ian Bond. All right, Ian, welcome back to the show. How you doing, man? Been a while.
I'm doing great, Ryan. You've moved a few time zones since the last time we talked. How is it out in sunny? Are you in sunny California or are you in Northern California?
I'm in sunny Southern California. So winter is officially over for me.
it's 70 degrees here, and it's spectacularly beautiful. And I can only imagine after leaving Oxford in the UK that you're delighted to be back to some sunshine.
It's pretty nice. Yeah. It's it feels like a different season, you know. Well, we got an interesting topic we're talking about today. We're talking about how to evaluate e-commerce websites and the elements that you should be looking for when you do that. So I kind of thought, you know, just kind of to kick ourselves off here, when you go to a web page, what are the first things that pop out at you? Just kind of gut level, what jumps out at you when you're looking at a brand new e-commerce website?
Okay, so you know, with the title being "The Essential Elements of E-commerce Evaluations," e-commerce site evaluations, I'm going to start off and come out of left field, like I like to do with you, and say. That I won't even go to a website if I don't like the number, and specifically the gross profit. So we do high ticket drop shipping. And if the sales price less the cost of goods sold, which includes includes shipping, if I don't have a 25% margin, I'm not going to get involved. I can fix anything on the website, but I can't fix the margins. I might be able to fix the margins a little bit. If I can contact suppliers and pre-purchase things, you can often get a 5 or 10% discount. Mm-hmm. But in general, the margins are something you have to deal with. So let me just put out there as a caveat that I won't. Now, I'm overstating it that I won't go to the website like everyone. I'm curious when I get a prospectus or an offering memorandum, I love to go to look at the website. So let's go there for a second. And okay. the first thing that I like to do if I'm really getting serious is we feel like that the SEO aspects, the search engine optimization aspects that are important in high ticket drop shipping are all surrounding in the hierarchy of the product pages, the collection pages, the brand pages, and then what I would call other information, which would include things like blog posts and buyer's guides and things like that. So I will look at, I will go to Google Analytics, and we will look at the best-selling products look at the best-selling products and then Google those products and see how those product pages look relative to competitors' product pages, because we want to have the best product pages on the internet. And so that means we want to have all of the relevant PDFs that show sizing. We want to have great product photos. We want to have great lifestyle photos. We want to have frequently asked questions. We want to have videos if they're available. Sometimes we make videos. I think I've mentioned that. We want to have the best page on the internet, and Google will recognize that over time and will send you traffic, and you'll rank very highly for that. Mm. Ditto with collection pages. So the way that brands do things is they do things in collections. Sometimes it's a similar style, or sometimes it's the same type of thing some different kinds of configurations. And then very, very important is the brand page itself, because the brand page has to tell the story. We are marketing right now for a brand that's made in the northern UK, not far from where you were. And it's a 160 or 70-year-old brand. And we have pictures of the factory, and these are craftsmen and been doing it the same way, their fathers and their father's fathers and their father's fathers, for that long. And I will tell you that story, and by the way, these products come with a little crest on them even. So these guys have really sold the heritage of what they're doing. And I think that brand is 30 or 40% more expensive than things that are of comparable material. And this is not a complex product. Comparable material because of the story, to be honest with you. And so those brand pages are really important, and they garner, we pay a lot of attention to them because they garner just an enormous amount of people buy into the brand pages. So the first thing I do is I look at kind of the SEO elements of a store that has margins that qualify for me.
Okay. Why focus on the 25% margin of profit? Like, why is that kind of your cutoff?
Because in high ticket drop shipping, you're going to be running mostly Google product listing ads, maybe some additional ads. And in order to have, to pay merchant processors, to pay Google, to pay your employees and other people, and still be able to get to a 10 to 15% margin, you can't start lower than 25%.
Okay.
You might be able with scale to start a little bit lower than that and make up on high volumes what you don't get in margins. And we have a store that is always threatening to go below 10%, below 25% at the gross profit margin, but the volumes are so high that, it's really worth it, right? So if you happen to be in that position, but and again, these are, those are percentage margins, but we always focus on dollar margins and not percentage margins. But I'm not looking at anything that doesn't have a high dollar margin. So the percentage margin has to be 25% in order for me to really be able to pay Google, to be honest with you. And then, the staff and other expenses we have.
Okay. And just to clarify, all of these numbers, are you doing this research on your own, or How do you get these numbers on like profit margin and SEO kind of stuff?
So usually when a site is advertised, listed by a website broker, I'm on the mailing list, or I'll inquire, get a copy of the offering memorandum, that offering memorandum will then have an income statement, and very quickly you can see, you know, kind of what the sales price is, and then what the cost of goods sold is, and what the shipping is, and you can even look and find out, you know, kind of what they're spending on paid traffic and all other kind of miscellaneous fees. So it's actually very obvious once you get the details of the listing. It's usually not obvious when you're just reading the high level blurb that people post in their listings. You have to actually inquire to get it.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So just because a store doesn't necessarily meet that requirement, doesn't necessarily mean you won't invest in it, right? Are there any times where you might make an exception or find some wiggle room?
The only time that I would violate my rule of my margin rule is if I think that the volumes are high enough, but I really won't go beyond that. I won't go there very frequently unless I have some kind of an oddball perspective that, you know, maybe I can extract better margins from the suppliers. But if a site's been up and running for 2 or 3 years, you would probably presume that the people that are running it are, you know, have tried various things, and you can ask.
Yeah.
But no, I won't do that. But so anyways, going back to your original question, and I digress. The first thing we're going to do is look at these SEO elements. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the site and I'm going to look at how easy it is to navigate around the site.
Okay.
You know, is it make intuitive spent? When my wife and I bought our second site, we spent an enormous amount of time, and she did a terrific job making it, so that people came there shopping for one thing, could find other things that were comparable, you know, kind of stealing a page or at least the concept from Amazon. You know, buyers who like this, you know, also bought that. A little bit different because we're showing people basically the same thing. We're not showing add-ons. But you can go to Google Analytics and you could look at, you know, how much time people spend on the site. And, you know, if people are shopping, you know, kind of multiple, multiple pages, and you're getting 6, 7, 8, you know, plus pages on any given visit, and the time is 3 or 4 minutes or more. And, you know, we have, our biggest site people come and oftentimes spend 7 or 8 minutes. Then you've got a site that's really easy to navigate. And, you know, having done this for a while now, you know, there are some fairly easy things that you can do to make it simple for people. So that's the second thing.
Yeah.
That we would like to do is make it, take a look at the how easy it is to navigate the site, to see if we can, if that's a room, offers room for improvement, or if they're really doing a great job. It also, you know, kind of puts you in the position, since you're checking a product and on the SEO, you're looking and finding out who the competition is. You also then can look at the navigation of the sites you're looking at versus the navigation of, you know, competitor sites. And so while you're going through this process, you're building, you know, kind of a, knowledge of what the competitive landscape looks like, which is very important.
Okay.
So, you know, that is, you know, I would say a collateral benefit from kind of doing it, kind of the way we do it.
Okay.
And then, you know, just to polish off my third thing is, I step back and I take a look at what I would call the aspects of the site that are some intangibles. The most important to me is, does it look like it inspires trust? Online shoppers are still, going to choose carefully who they do business with. Your About Us page has to look good. There are associations, industry associations that you can join that make you look legitimate. Obviously, the Better Business Bureau, the fact that you have various trust guards and trust seals and security certificates can inspire trust. Do you inspire trust? Yeah. I will look idiosyncratically at whether or not there's wasted space. If it looks like the layout is good, you want to see things above the fold. I like to see products above the fold. We always put lifestyle photos well above the fold because people like to see how things are going to look in their home. Mm. So we like lifestyle photos, and we like to put bestsellers right someplace where can kind of hook somebody to see if they gonna maybe explore a little bit further some of the things that are bestsellers. And then what is the social proof? How many stars, how many reviews, how many stars, how many testimonials, products get? And, how does that inspire trust? So the third bucket would be, I would call it somewhat idiosyncratic in terms of how the website looks, but I really am focusing there on, does it inspire a shopper's trust?
Okay, great. I want to circle back to navigation real quick because you brought up some interesting points there. And you talked about how, people might spend up to 7 or 8 minutes on a site kind of looking around. What is it about a website that keeps people there for 7 to 8 minutes? Are there any common features there that websites have?
Yeah, I think we use a lot of faceted search. So that faceted search means that you can narrow down very specifically what you're looking for. So if you're looking for something that's 33 inches, you don't want to go to a page that has stuff that's 12 inches to 108 inches. I mean, you're looking for something that fits, that's 33 inches. It fits your now. You might be open to suggestions on whether or not you want something that's white or oyster or gray or espresso or some other color. You may be open to a texture, but you got 33 inches to play with. That's it. And so if you can show people something that's relative and I'm using inches just because, in this example, this would be the relevant constraint. If you can show something that's in the relevant constraint, show different styles, different suppliers, different brands, different price points, you can show people the best sellers. And we always require, we always ask all of our suppliers for their best sellers, and we put our most effort into the SEO and the product descriptions behind those best sellers. And if you can, lead people, to what are their best sellers, we think you're helping them. And we think, that by giving them, a smaller number of highly relevant things to look at, you're doing them a favor and you're probably converting at a much higher level, a much higher rate than you normally would. Imagine going and looking at something and seeing, 4 or 5 pages of results of products, and Lord knows how many products per page, and it's got all different sizes. That's just not helpful for most people. So the more relevant you can make it, the better it can be. Now, in our faceted search, it would have 33 inches. It would also have white. And so you can let people help themselves. And so I think faceted search is something that's underutilized, and we use it to the best of our ability every time we can.
Right. Okay. So if we could tie kind of these three things, you kind of mentioned the search engine optimization, the navigation, and the intangibles.
Yes.
How does all that come together in your mind when you see the listed price of a website?
Well, it tells me how much work I might have to do, right? Okay. Or, flip that around, what the opportunities are. We think that the search option and the search option optimization aspect in high ticket dropshipping is underutilized. I think, frankly, the people that do Amazon affiliate sites spend more time on particularly on the The fourth piece of content, which I didn't spend much time on, which is on information like guides and reviews and things like this that are aimed at, kind of broader searches that people go into Google, that ultimately, top of the funnel that ultimately get people to your product page. But we think that the guys that do Amazon affiliate sites do that better than most of the people that are selling, higher priced items. And where, quite frankly, it's not uncommon for people to have thousands of products and don't write unique product descriptions. They take what the suppliers get and they copy and paste them. Everyone has almost nearly the same description because everyone, just takes a copy paste approach to, putting their web pages together. And so we think it's a big deal.
Right. So you want to have it more personalized.
Well, we want to have it. We want to have it be as helpful as possible. I mean, I think that. I think that there's kind of two reasons that we exist. Okay, one is to provide incredible, helpful advice for people, and then the other is logistics. I can tell you that we don't have unique products. You don't have to shop with us to get what you want. You have choices of places that you can shop.
Yeah.
And so, for us to help you make a decision that's right for you by giving you the best on-page experience, but also on the phone information or by email information, that's crucial. And then in this day and age where delivery is so important, and we do a lot of things in the home furnishings market where people are doing remodelings, people are on tight time schedules and they, need something because they have a contractor maybe doing a remodel for them. And so, Amazon has unfortunately spoiled people that they can, in some days get it, sometimes get it same day, but, 2-day delivery is a must these days. And, oftentimes it's next day. Now, we ship big, bulky things. And so we're in the logistics business. And so it kind of advice and, keeping people up to date with a rational expectation for when they can receive what they've ordered. That those are the we think we really excel at providing people with an ongoing tracking of something that's complicated to get to their house. It came into the port of Los Angeles. It was in a staging area. It may have been assigned a tracking number before it actually got on a flatbed, an 18-wheeler. It then went across the country and got to a local terminal. You have to be contacted in order to schedule delivery. There's a lot of touch points that are required in the logistics piece. Yeah. And quite frankly, being a niche authority in the niches that we operate in, we do that better, we think, than the big box guys, whether it's Home Depot or, whoever it might be in the niche that we operate in. So providing the advice and then providing people with the delivery expectation and experience that they would want to have for what is a large purchase, we think that those are two crucial reasons we exist.
Okay, great. So let's kind of wrap up here. It sounds like there's a lot of information that goes into these calculations. Where's the best place for people to go to find all this information?
Well, I think the best place that you can go is just keep listening to us, and we're going to keep hammering these concepts home, and put content up on the blog. I think we're all inveterate shoppers. And what I hope to do by, providing this information is to kind of sharpen people's focus when they do go shopping so that they start to pay attention to things like this. And, the best way to learn about these things is to dive in and sign up and get term sheets and look at deals yourself to see, if you can spot what you think the moving parts are. Start to come up with a checklist of things that you can evaluate things on. Now, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that we're in the process of putting together a webinar for people that want to learn, you know, kind of from soup to nuts, these concepts. And so hold tight for that. We're not ready to go live with that, but, you know, we will have that coming out soon. So, cool. You know, a little shameless self-promotion.
Sure. All right, Ian, that was great. Thank you so much. This was really helpful.
Ryan, my pleasure. And welcome back to sunny Southern California.
It's great to be back in the warm weather.
Yeah. I can bet.
All right. We'll see you next week. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, folks, there you have it. That wraps up my conversation with Ian Bond of Professional Website Investors. He shared a ton of valuable insights and advice today on how to analyze and evaluate available e-commerce websites. We also shared some tools and resources, which will all be linked up in the show notes at professionalwebsiteinvestors.com. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please consider subscribing, sharing with a friend, or leaving us a review in your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, best of luck in all that you do, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Professional Website Investor Podcast.